7:20 on a Wednesday morning. Joining us now in studio is Northfield Mayor Ron Pownell.
Good morning, Jeff.
Along with City Administrator Ben Martin. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeff.
You're both dry as you made it in this morning?
Yes.
Yeah, we got quite the storm going through a little
the
while
rain
ago.
Parted for us.
Yeah, good. Good. City Council meeting last night, the first regular meeting of June. You had quite a bit on the agenda, so let's kind of get into it. Mm-hmm. First of all, you formed the temporary City Hospital Governance Committee last night. That was part of the consent agenda. We talked about that briefly before, but let's talk about that now. What is the charge of this committee, this new committee?
Yeah, Jeff, thanks for asking about that. It is a temporary committee really to look at how we can be stronger in our relationship with the hospital. So just really looking at some governance issues, and it's really an opportunity to bring in three members of the hospital board, three members of the city council to really mm-hmm. have an opportunity to really discuss things in a small group setting. And it's better than what it has been previously, because we've had a smaller number of people than that meet on a regular basis just to receive updates, stay closely connected with our city hospital and the city council. And so this is broadening that, to receive input and have communication, and just so that we can have a really stronger relationship.
So this differs from the hospital board. How? The hospital board, is that more operational on the hospital side? Or
yes. The okay. hospital board is really, their responsibility is overseeing the operations of the city hospital. So this is, yes, this is not considering overseeing the operations of the hospital. This is more higher level governance, that issues or areas where the city council and the hospital have really kind of it's where we intersect, I would say, as the two governing bodies.
Okay.
And so it's an opportunity for us to look at those, see if there's anything that we could do better.
All right. Let's move on, because we have a lot to go through. Age-Friendly Northfield, they had a request for funding, and that was approved last night. What was that request for?
Yeah, so the age-friendly community, Northfield's been designated as an age-friendly community mm-hmm. through AARP, and so they did a community-wide survey. They have a steering committee that's been working on kind of next steps, and some of those next steps are to take that information in the surveys and start to form some focus groups to ultimately lead to the development of an action plan within the domains of a healthy, age-friendly community that the AARP has kind of set out. So they've got some great ideas that they want to proceed with, and in order to accomplish that, there's quite a bit of work to do it well, and I think that so they're trying to find some financial resources to get some assistance for somebody to help organize those meetings, help put the action plans together, and submit it by the end of the year in order for us to continue to meet the requirements of the age-friendly designation. And so they requested some matching funds from the city, seeking up to $5,000 with matching dollars that they'd be finding from community partners. And that would allow them to move forward to develop that designation. So the city council last night unanimously agreed to support that by motion and directed staff to work on basically it's a short-form service agreement for them to perform those provisions as part of those matching dollars that will be on the next agenda and scheduled on consent. So really doing some great work out there, and mm-hmm. I'm sure there'll be a lot of direct crossover to city work mm-hmm. that we do that we can do to make this an even better community as it relates to being age-friendly.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, and I just wanted to, I like demographic data. And so when they submitted a letter to us as well, and just really watching that data that's talking about how many people that will actually be here in our community by 2020, it'll be about 27% of our population will be 65 and older.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a significant number, and as they looked at the numbers and we're tracking the growth in that, there's significant growth there, just like there will be all across the nation. So it's really getting out ahead of the curve to see how we can be addressing that population shift.
All right. Let's move on. There were a couple of actions considering Spring Creek Road. One was restricting some parking along there, but more notably, a resolution to support tax increment financing for some affordable housing there. Let's talk about that. What was discussed last night?
Well, yeah. I would just say on the first one with the Spring Creek Road, so that will be paving an existing gravel road. So there will be more decisions on that coming up, but that will be a huge benefit, I think, to everyone, the farming community, those that live along there, because as people drive on that gravel road, as we have residential homes along there, the homes just get coated with dust. So it will be that. There'll be more coming on that, so the paving of Spring Creek Road. But then the next one was affordable housing, and that is our support of considering a tax increment financing. And that will help our getting our backing, the council's backing on that, to move in that direction will help increase the likelihood that when we go out to compete for, I'm going to get this wrong, the local, no, housing tax credits. There is a really competitive process, and understandably, because affordable housing is a huge issue, not just in Northfield, but all across the state. And so we're competing for dollars to help us make this project a reality. And so I would just, if Administrator Martink has anything else to add on that.
Yeah, so this would just—it's just part of that application that the mayor mentioned to be able to try and get the tax credits. Does require you to do an early designation of commitments of partnering funds to help strengthen the application. So there would be an approval process later if we are awarded that to actually go through the formal TIF analysis. But this commits it for the purposes of grant application. And again, they're looking to build through the Housing and Redevelopment Authority in partnership with the Three Rivers Community Action Group that's locally a nonprofit, is looking to be the developer on that. So that'd be 32 new affordable rental units in the community, and we know that there's a strong demand for that. So they went through last evening kind of showing the existing facilities, really beautiful affordable housing units, talked about the need, and then also got into the financial details to show that in order for this to cash flow and to work, they really need to try and get a number of different funds together to do that. So basically how the TIF would work is that when the building's built, basically the taxes are kind of paid and then recaptured back to help to go to offset the initial development costs. So it's not impacting the existing people. It's really taking the dollars from that particular project, going back in to help keep the cost down to be able to build some new affordable housing.
All right. So this is all contingent then on the whole process going through the grant application and such.
That's right. Okay. So like just to give you an idea of how long this takes and how complicated it is, that we'd be looking at starting construction in August of 2019 if everything fell in place.
If everything fell in place. Right. All right. So there are a lot of moving parts there.
Yep.
All right. Let's move on. You talked about the half-cent sales tax with the property tax referendum coming up for what I guess is being referred to now as the Cannon River Civic Center. Yep. Is that correct? Now, what was the action taken last night?
Really, it was the first time that the council had an opportunity to look at the potential ballot language and a proposed resolution. So it was an opportunity really just for discussion.
Okay.
Questions, it will be on our agenda again next week. I think we had community members there as well that they're working on this really more behind the scenes. As we look at potentially, the council looks at potentially moving this forward to a vote in November.
All right. Let's move on. The East Cannon River Trail Project. Had a chance to ride the bike on that the other day. Very nice trail. But it turned out to be a whole lot more expensive than we thought. About $130,000 in cost overages. Let's talk about that. Where did we go over and how did we do that?
Well, we had some overruns, I think, early on as it related to some of the soil conditions that we ran into with the project. So I think some of those were some of the pieces of it. I would emphasize that I think overall on the project, when you look at it, it's on entirety, though, and the sources and uses of funds, really a reasonable overall total project cost. I know I wasn't here for the history behind the council and how they kind of put it together, but in the end, I think it was very reasonable what the final total project cost was, a little over $1 million that we had in total project cost, 1.2, I think, million cost. So in order to close out the project, we had about $150,000 extra that was unanticipated that was transferred in from the project fund that we took from a capital project fund and really some excess reserves that we have for these types of uses for capital projects. So the council did that. But as you said, we did the ribbon cutting this last weekend. I wasn't able to be there, unfortunately, but heard it was a nice event, and certainly it's a beautiful asset to us, to the region, and I think that's going to definitely not only serve our local population, but be of interest to our visitors, to our community as well.
Now, there have been some concerns expressed about maintenance of that trail. And has there been some conversation as well, maybe turning that over to the DNR? Do I have any information, or do you have any information on that? Am I correct in any of that?
So I think you're probably referring to the west side.
That'd be the west side, okay.
Yeah, the west side trail that runs along Armstrong Road.
Okay.
That's the older section of the trail, and so we're in conversations with DNR. They're looking at potentially taking that over, and so there's... We're in kind of a pause in terms of doing any sort of maintenance on that at this point until we can figure out ownership of that trail.
Okay. As far as the maintenance on this, is that going to be cleared out in the wintertime? Is that going to be used in the wintertime, the new road, the east side?
Yeah, in fact, it was actually plowed this this winter when it was actually open. We didn't really necessarily advertise it real heavily, but... Yeah, the city takes care of it, I believe, down to the city boundaries, and then Dundas takes care of it from there and their portion. So it's open and active use in the wintertime. I was out there on the trail in the winter, and it was a beautiful and serene kind of environment to get out there. So it's great, and as the loop that you mentioned on the other side, the Milltowns Trail, that's the great thing, too, is it's a you can go – you don't have to go down the trail and back the trail the same way. You can actually go through a nice loop so you get a different view. So I think it's great for families. It's a reasonable length that's doable for a novice bike rider. You can make a stop in Dundas on your way. There's lots of, you can connect right into the downtown Northfield. So it's really a wonderful trail, and hope people get out and utilize it and check it out.
All right. Let's move on to the local emergency. You declared a local emergency in the situation involving the fire at the wastewater plant. Where do we start here? First of all, the local emergency. Explain that part of it.
So the purpose of the local emergency is under state statutes, the mayor may invoke the authority to declare an emergency, a state of emergency, and it kind of outlines very specific items. Basically, the goal of doing it in this particular case is we had a major fire event at the wastewater plant that's going to take a long time to deal with. We currently are having some investigative review of the cause of the fire by our insurance company. It's taking a look at it. So we've been very limited as to what we can take a look at. We can't start cleaning yet. But once we want to start doing that, one of the things the local emergency declaration, while it's active, allows you to do is to forego some of the statutory requirements that we have on competitive bidding requirements. To give you an example, if there's something over the cost of $100,000, you have to go through a sealed bid process that requires calling for proposals. You have to do advertising for a period of time, so it can take a month in order to even get proposals back. And so, like that as an example, we want to move swiftly, or at least have the ability to look into moving swiftly as it relates to something like a cleanup. That could be, the cleanup alone could be in excess of $100,000. So we want to be able to move swiftly to be able to do that. So we can still get multiple proposals in written quotes, but not necessarily have to go through the delayed advertising period, which in some cases, you know, isn't an issue on projects many times. But in this case, we think that it might be something we utilize. So we wanted to keep the option open. And certainly the major event that we had out there certainly qualifies itself for the purposes of health and safety on a critical piece of waste treatment that we have within the city. Now, we've got temporary measures in place to treat our waste. We're doing some extra hauling to the Met Council. It's going to cost us extra dollars to transport the end waste material and the hard material end waste, and then also dispose of it. But long-term, those options could be limited. Ultimately, we want the plant to be fully functioning local, so we have complete control. So this action would allow us to basically deal with some of those contracting issues to move quickly. It's only for 30 days, so after that time period, it falls back to the normal processes, and we'll manage with that. But this does at least give us some flexibility on the short term to deal with the event.
Do we have a better idea what the price tag on this is going to be?
Yeah, so yesterday we received from Bolton and Mink, our city engineers had done some preliminary analysis. Now, this is very limited because it's based on a visual inspection, looking at the equipment, taking pictures, because we haven't been able to completely dig into the equipment because of our insurance review of it. But they came back with a preliminary estimate of $4 to $6 million for the plant replacement, and it's mainly the equipment that we have. The building itself is in pretty good shape, it looks like, so it's really the major equipment on that end. So
wow.
Yeah,
that's a real big price tag. Who's going to pay for that? How are we going to pay for that?
Well, fortunately, you know, we do have insurance for property mm-hmm. and equipment. We've already met our annual deductible of $75,000. So after that aggregate annual, we look at $1,000 per event. So potentially it's our insurance. Now, that could have is what we're anticipating with that. Longer term, you know, that can impact our premiums, mm-hmm. and we have to deal with those issues. But and we also don't know some of the details about the interim costs that we have on transport and some of those things. We're still looking into whether those things are going to cost us as well, because we could be shipping 6 to 12 months before we're back online with the full plant operation, which means we're shipping like almost on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. We are looking at some alternatives to bring temporary equipment in, too, to help reduce some of those costs, to deal with some of the waste locally in the back end. But, yeah, it's a major price tag that we have and major event. The good news, it was contained and that was on the back end of the process. There is kind of a heating process that it relates to where the fire occurred. There's kind of a lime treatment that takes this kind of sludge slurry mixture to kind of heat it up and to create it into a more of a solid form that's easier to dispose of. So that's the room where it gets hot, where we had the fire occur, but it was contained to that site. So that's the good news on that. But yes, it's a major cost. That there was major equipment replacement that was actually scheduled for replacement, so it is a little bit older on its time period that it has. So I think it was 2021, I think it was what it was scheduled for, some major replacement in that as well. So it wasn't too far down the road that we were looking at replacing a lot of that equipment.
Wow, boy, that's this is pretty amazing. I've got so many questions involving this. First of all, you know, you look at the structure out there. We've got a cement building with a bunch of steel pipes. What is there to burn? How 4.6 or $4 to $6 million? How do we get $4 to $6 million damage out of a fire? And how did that spread?
Right. Well, that's what the report, that the investigative report that's going down, is hoping to identify the cause of the fire specifically. Again, this end process is kind of a conveyor belt system. Then we have a lime material that mm-hmm. heats up and breaks down the material to kind of creates this kind of, it's kind of like dirt almost, mm-hmm. an inert kind of material. Mm-hmm. So it gets up to, I think it gets over, I don't remember, I shouldn't guess, but I think it's like over 150 degrees, 190 degrees maybe, or something like that, that it gets up to.
So is that material? Is that what caught fire? Or?
Well, that's what we don't know. So we had pictures that we showed last evening that kind of showed the equipment. It's kind of hard to tell exactly what it was, but there's they believe the source was kind of in this conveyor belt area, so they're looking into what it could be. Is it related, was it the machinery, electrical machinery, was it related to some of the materials that we had in there, the chemicals that was processed, those kinds of things, and the equipment. So hopefully we'll be able to identify that. There is no, the fire marshal is not doing the investigation. They determined there's no foul play or anything, so they didn't want to, they didn't see a need to investigate mm-hmm. it, so it's really our insurance investigation.
All right. The timeline of this whole thing, you know, you'd think there would be some alarms in place, and evidently there were alarms in place. And I think Minister Bennett say last night that it was they went off around 9 o'clock. But our reports are that a passerby called in the fire at about 10 o'clock. Do we not have alarms? Are they not being checked? What's going on there? Why was the fire an hour let go for an hour before we got there?
Yeah, we have what's called a SCADA system in the plant. So what that does is it gives you alerts to how the plant's functioning. So when we talk about alarms, those aren't all fire alarms that are going off. That space in particular is not sprinkled, and so it does have some limited fire suppression based on the time that the plant was built. Building mm-hmm. codes are different now, so certainly as we do a rebuild, there'll be a lot more protections built in than the old building code required on that. But some of those alerts that were referenced to weren't fire alarms. They were notices that there's something going on within the plant, but doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily mean that it's a catastrophic type of event happening. So there was an electrical storm that evening, so we were responding to some calls at that time, and we're going to come back to the council once we get the investigative report and kind of walk through kind of what happened with the event, what type of getting into these details of what the alarms are and those kinds of things, but we have to give a comprehensive report once we get that investigation back. So certainly on our list to explain it more, but yeah, that's the good news is that maybe the electrical storm or the lightning storm, excuse me, that we had, we did get a call from a local resident who called in a 911. The fire department responded to try and locate where it was coming from, and that's how ultimately we responded to that call, and they did a great job on the fire department. So we wanted to say thank you to them for their quick work, and they had a lot of people down there to get to take things under control as well.
This is the second major event of 2018 at the wastewater treatment plant. Usually there's zero for many years. Are we doing things right? Are we going to go through? Is there going to be an investigation on everything that we do there?
So I don't know if you can call flooding. That was the first one, right, where mm-hmm. we had the flooding. And so I think that it's the way it's situated in the land that it's on. We have a river that runs through our community, right, and sometimes it floods. So I think we looked at that, and with each thing that potentially comes up here.
Was that caused by the river? That was in January.
That particular
I thought
event.
That was a valve event.
Yeah, that
oh,
event.
I'm sorry.
No, that's right. The water issue was a valve issue that we had. These are completely unrelated, so bad timing, I guess, on it. We've had years and years of no mm-hmm. issues out at the wastewater plant. So, unfortunately, we've had a couple of major events. There doesn't appear to be any relation between the two, but so we've had water, and now we've had fire, and hopefully we don't have ice, I guess, the third one or whatever that might be. But we look forward to hearing more about what the indications are that might have helped cause this one, and we can certainly look at this one and talk about the other one as well, but they're really kind of unrelated issues.
All right. Yeah. That's it. We're out of time, but we want to thank you so much for coming in and joining us. We certainly appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Great. Right. Thanks, Jeff.
Right. Thank you.
Northfield Mayor Rhonda Pownell, along with City Administrator Ben Mardick.